Hello, and welcome to a guest episode of the Comic Book Page podcast. In this episode, Bob and I will be handing over control of the show to a few of our listeners, so join us as we sit back and listen to what they have to say.
Welcome to the first episode of Final Crisis Analysis, presented by ComicBookPage.com. I am your co-host, Chris Johnson, and joining me is my co-host, Juan Castro.
Hello, everyone.
And over the next, I don't know, it depends on how long we talk.
The next period of time.
next period of time, that's good, depending on how
it will
long
only
we...
Yes, they will only take place in the matter of a heartbeat.
Juan, we only have 72.4 seconds to finish recording this, or else
this
sentence becomes meaningless.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll be taking you on a journey page by page through the controversial Final Crisis event. We'll be following the Grant Morrison reading order, which we'll reproduce here. And there's actually a modification to the reading order that I discovered. But the reading order goes Final Crisis number 1 through 3, Superman Beyond number 1 through 2, Final Crisis Submit, Final Crisis number 4, and this is a change from the order that was originally posted in the Morrison interview on Newsarama. Batman number 682 and 683 actually go before Final Crisis number 5, because the Batman Psycho Merge Breaking Free is mentioned in Final Crisis number 5. And if you have no idea what that means, don't worry, because we'll help you get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get there.
That's why we're here.
Yes. We're only going to cover issue number 1 tonight. We're still going to be getting a feel on how this will go, depending on how long this is. We'll see if each episode is going to be one issue, or maybe we'll do two each in some cases. I think with Final Crisis Submit, we could probably lump that in with number 4.
We could probably do all of Beyond in one episode, too.
Yeah, we could. Probably. That would be a good idea. So before we get into the analysis, I think we should talk about how this came about. This has been a pretty... Final Crisis has been a pretty divisive topic on the internet, with pretty much 90% of the...
I wouldn't call that divisive. I would call that a consensus, you know?
A consensus, yeah. It's pretty much a consensus that Final Crisis was not... the best event that DC could have gone with for the big event, to put it lightly. And there was quite a bit of debate on the comic book page forum about Final Crisis number 7, and John mentioned if anybody would be interested on covering the issues, analyzing them, that he would gladly put that up on the comic book page feed. And I want to thank John for putting our random ramblings up on his feed. We really appreciate that.
Thanks for giving us a place to rant.
Yes. Because Juan and I, ever since this began and Batman RIP began over in Morrison's run, we've been discussing each issue every time it's come out on Skype and going through all the back issues and seeing, you know, little clues that were hidden here and there. And so when I saw that post on the forum, I thought, I think me and Juan could probably take care of that. And so,
and also to give a bit more background on us, between both of us, we practically own every single Morrison trade out there.
So we own a great deal of them. I know for me that before the trifecta of All-Star Superman, Morrison's run on Batman, and Final Crisis, I had only read Arkham Asylum before. But ever since reading those three series together, I pretty much have been on a Morrison tear, and I think I made 10 trade in stock trades order of his older stuff to start out with. So Juan and I have both just been totally tearing through Morrison's past work as we've been reading through Final Crisis and his Batman run and his other current work. And we both really, really enjoyed Final Crisis. And we wanted to give a bit of a shout-out to it since it's been criticized quite harshly across the internet, and we wanted to really give it a place to shine, but that doesn't mean we aren't going to mention the things that kind of didn't work, because I don't think it's completely flawless. I think there are definitely a couple of areas where it could have improved.
Since I really enjoyed this, I mean, when I was analyzing this for my notes, I was being, like, extremely nitpicky just so I can have, like, a more balanced viewpoint.
Right. In case you haven't noticed, this is going to be spoiler-filled. So, yep. If you...
We might also spoil other past Morrison works, which, like, it relates to things that happened in Final Crisis.
Yeah. Because one of the... Morrison's things with all the books he writes is that he has tons of little references to his past works running throughout all of his DC stuff, making kind of this Morrison continuity running through them all. So we might mention a couple from time to time. Seven Soldiers probably being the major run, since the Seven Soldiers Mr. Miracle miniseries was kind of where Morrison first formed his ideas for Final Crisis. It's not exactly a prologue to Final Crisis, because there's some continuity issues between the two series, but that's where a lot of his ideas that would originally, or would later, I should say, be put into Final Crisis originated.
The seeds were planted in his mind, you could say.
Alright, so are you ready to get the show on the road?
Sure.
Alright, so we're going to be going page by page with each issue, and we're going to start off with the story covers for each issue, which are the sliver ones, because some of the sliver covers have hints at what's to come and connect with events in later issues, which we'll go through as they come up. And on the first sliver cover, which you can probably find on Comic Book DB, but I'll just describe it here. It's got a prehistoric axe being held up by an arm, and in the background on a cave wall, which makes sense considering that this kicks off with Anthro, the first boy, and also to the end of Final Crisis number 7, you see the bat symbol, the Superman symbol, and the Wonder Woman symbol in the background on the cave wall. And there's flecks of blood coming off of the axe, which are flying past the Batman symbol specifically. And that could...
Which, when I discovered, it blew Chris's mind.
Yeah. That was like one afternoon where we were just going back, and I think I was like, dude, Juan, the first issue of his Batman run, Zero and R. And you were like, dude, check out the first cover to Final Crisis number 1. So,
yeah.
Our minds are just being blown, you know, right and left.
Yeah.
And that is a reference to a number of things. RIP, of course, because the logo for RIP is the bat symbol drenched in blood. And also, you could also tie it into Batman's quote-unquote death in Final Crisis number 6. And I have a theory concerning this cover as it relates to the ending of Final Crisis number 7, but I think I'll hold off until we get to that point to bring it up.
Great. Should we move to page 1?
Yep. Why don't you start us off with page 1?
Okay, a little detail that I noticed. You know how behind Anthro you see like a couple of deer running?
Yep.
On the cover, under the Trinity logos, there are also some deer running on the cave wall painting.
That's true. Yeah.
And we hear for the first word being spoken on Final Crisis is "Man" by none other than Metron.
Yep. On a 2-page spread, we see the I should note that this issue starts on the very first page with Anthro, who is the quote unquote first boy. He was the first Cro-Magnon boy born in the Stone Age, and I think he was introduced in Showcase 78, somewhere around there. And it originally, Final Crisis was supposed to begin with Anthro, the first boy, and then end with Commandy, the last boy, but things kind of changed throughout it, which we'll get to when we get to Final Crisis number 7.
And then on page 3, we have some interaction between Metron and Anthro, where he gives fire to Anthro, which is like symbolic to the giving of fire to man to give the birth of knowledge and technology and all that kind of stuff. But as we later find out, fire was not the only knowledge he passed down.
Right. And also we have the symbols, and this is also the revised Final Crisis looking Metron with the silver body and the blue symbols on his body, which will later play a role when we get to the end of the first issue. Both the symbol on his chest and the symbol on his face. And then moving on from there, we have a splash page featuring a bunch of cavemen in battle. And there's one particular caveman that's at the top with the pelt that's around his neck, and that's actually Vandal Savage, the immortal villain.
Now, yeah, that was the thing you told me about before we started recording, right?
Actually, that's on the next two pages.
Okay. So, you might as well take care of those since it's your theory.
Okay. So, well, it's not really a theory. It's kind of a symbolic thing Morrison does. Because in the next two pages, we have more of the caveman fight. We see Vandal Savage come upon this young cave girl and dragging her out of this tent, and it looks like he's going to do some very ungentlemanly things to her person when we see Anthro show up with fire, and he scares Vandal Savage and the rest of the cavemen away. And if you look at it, and because one of the major themes of Final Crisis is it's about stories. And if you look at this, we have the classic villain, hero, and damsel in distress with Vandal Savage, this young woman, and Anthro.
Never noticed that before, but yeah.
And also, if you notice, he's undamaged in the first two panels on the page, but in between the panel where we see his back and him seeing the girl, we see a wound on his arm, so clearly she attacked him. Yeah, she definitely fought back, and that also adds credence to him being Vandal Savage in that he's taken this axe wound to the chest and he's still walking. And also on the second page, the fourth panel, his face really matches the picture. The face of Vandal Savage when we get to the scene with the Secret Society later on in the issue.
Yep, and after that we hop around to Turpin, where he's on the Metropolis docks, just walking around, and he finds a dead god. Well, a dying god, I guess, and ironically, lying on top of Super Gun toys. Ironically, because he died by a super bullet, so...
Yep, a bullet of Radeon, which was shot by Darkseid from the future, no less, into the past. And also, we have Turpin talking about, in connection with the previous scene, about fire and how, you know, in the first scene we have fire being this new revolutionary thing to these cavemen, and we see him lighting a cigarette with it, like it's an everyday thing. That's kind of a nice parallel there.
So I'm not a long-time DC reader. So what's the deal with Turpin? What's his origin?
Turpin is most of my knowledge of Turpin comes from the Superman animated series, and he was kind of like the big cop at in Metropolis. I think he might have headed some super-powered, you know, law enforcement division. In Metropolis.
Yes, because we see him mentioned that dealing with superheroes before.
Yep. And he's also on the trail of six missing kids, who he will actually find these missing kids, but he won't exactly be happy that he found them when we get to that scene. And then after we have Turpin discovering the body of Orion, and this actually, we're going to have to bring up Countdown, unfortunately.
No, we won't.
Well, there's a couple of things that connect to Countdown, because at the end of Countdown, the Orion Darkseid section of Countdown, Orion punches Darkseid in the chest and I think rips his heart out. And then he just wanders off after the big battle. And so it can be surmised that he wandered off and he fell at the docks, and that's where Turpin finds him. So there are some connections to Countdown, even though most of the series didn't have anything to do with Final Crisis.
Yeah, kinda, sorta, but not really.
Yeah.
And we see the Black Racer.
Yes, we do. Hovering in the background.
Yep.
Is the embodiment of death.
Yes, and we go to the next page, and...
Well, we've got a couple of other things on here.
Oh, yeah, the lines, yeah.
Yeah, we've got Orion mentioning that heaven is cracked and broken, and this relates to the first... this relates to the war in quote-unquote heaven between the new gods of New Genesis and Darkseid and his forces of Apocalypse, and... how Darkseid won the battle and ended up falling. And we find out that he cracked, that Darkseid actually ended up cracking the multiverse, for lack of a better term, when he fell. And also we have Orion's words to Turpin, "He is in you all," which is, that sentence is kind of finished by Turpin after he's released from Darkseid's control in Final Crisis number 7.
And after that, we go to another scene when everything's starting to go down. The skies are red, which we all know what that means. The crisis is finally here. And yep. We see John Stewart at his day job.
Yeah.
getting an alert for... From his ring that 10-11's going down, and they're so rare that he's, like, never actually heard of it.
Yep. And then on the next page, we're back at the docks, where we, on the first panel, we see the Black Racer yet again, and we see Green Lantern arriving at the scene of Orion's death, and we have, Hal Jordan being alerted, but his ring is not responding yet, so John Stewart's left to scope out the scene initially. And we also get Turpin's, you know, feelings about him being present at the death of this god, and him saying, you know, let the space cops handle the fallout, because
yeah.
He says it feels like sacrilege.
And then we go back to Turpin, and Rene, and now he's with Rene Montoya on a bridge, and they're looking at the storm that's brewing, and they're having a conversation where apparently this is the first meeting between the new Question and Turpin. So
yeah.
There's a bit of awkward conversation there where he's accusing her of, wasn't the last one a guy? Yeah,
yeah.
He died from lung cancer for smoking as Turpin lights up a cigarette.
Which it's been Final Crisis, and it's understandable how it's not exactly the best entry point for new DC readers, but this is a nice bit of dialogue from Morrison, seeing how he did work on 52, where Vic Sage died and Montoya became the new Question, and how he is bringing it up in this issue about how Vic Sage died from lung cancer. And also, on this page and the next page, we have more of the red lightning signaling the crisis, and we'll also see that mentioned in a couple of other books on a couple of other Earths, in fact. And on the next page, we see more conversation between Turpin and Montoya, and Turpin kind of makes a joke at Vic Sage's expense, and... Montoya is just totally giving him sass, which is great. And because she's also brings up the six kids and is asking if they had any meta gene activity or anything, and we find out that somebody's been targeting kids that have been found to have metagenes. And she gives him a card, which is labeled the Dark Side Club. And we have the great ending line by Turpin Super Muck Mucks with his dealings of the superpowered community.
And on the next page, Hal finally joins John at the crime scene, which is on lockdown. And we see on the first panel a very cool poster of Mr. Miracle, which it's a funny hint considering how he'll come into play later.
And the Seven Soldiers Mr. Miracle miniseries kind of reintroduced Shiloh Norman as Mr. Miracle, and he's doing all these crazy stunts that nobody else would attempt because, of course, he's the super escaped artist, and he has Mother Box with him.
I have a question for you. Is the number 2 relevant?
Cause, number 2?
Yeah, because if you look, the crate in which Orion is killed is labeled 222, and we have a Channel 2 news copter. We have two Green Lanterns, and the first one to arrive to the scene was 2814.2. So maybe I'm looking way too much into this, but there's a lot of two in this page.
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, so Hal arrives at the crime scene. They have some nice back and forward with what kept you, Flyboy, blonde or redhead, which in case of Hal could have been both and would have been perfectly valid. So Hal immediately recognizes Orion, and they say they have to contact the Guardians and the JLA, because this is some heavy stuff going on.
Yes. And then we go to the Guardians on Oa, who are, you know, telling them to, you know, keep the crime scene secure just for radiation prints. They tell him to locate the weapon, which they'll discover in issue number 2. And we have the report that a Special Operations Alpha Lantern unit is on the way. And Grant Morrison, while the Alpha Lanterns were introduced in Green Lantern, I think Morrison actually came up with the concept of the Alpha Lanterns, which are pretty much just these, they're like the special operations when ordinary Green Lantern won't do. You send in the Alpha Lanterns, and they're like pure, they're fully under the control of the Guardians of Oa, and they follow the Book of Oa fully, and they don't disobey orders or anything like that. And they're just
they're basically the SWAT of the Green Lantern Corp.
Yeah, they are. And we end this page with John making a mention that new gods, they come with bad gods, too.
On the next page, very first panel, we have Metron's chair on a landfill, it looks like, surrounded by mirrors.
Yep.
And we have the League of Titans going after the chair, which, to be honest, I've never seen this guys before.
Yeah. It consists of Sparks, Empress. I haven't heard of those two characters, but
plus in mind, Masimenos.
Masimenos, yeah. They were on the Teen Titans cartoon, and they were actually transferred over to the comic from the cartoon. And it's a bit of a joke with Sparks going "Go Titans" because you know, with the Teen Titans cartoon, they had the comic Teen Titans Go, and also in the theme song Teen Titans Go, so it's kind of a play on that with the Go Titans from Sparks.
And this is a setup by Dr. Light and and Mirror Master, who also won the chair for Libra for some reason. And Mirror Master is an interesting thing to have here, considering he was like the first major villain, like actual villain Animal Man encountered.
Yeah, he was created by Grant Morrison, so of course Morrison's gonna bring him into this. And I love the line by Dr. Light, the first innocent victims of the blindingly obvious Dr. Light Mirror Master team.
Isn't Mirror Master like an old-school Flash villain?
He is. He's the first incarnation of Mirror Master was back in the Silver Age.
Yeah, when he used mirrors to hypnotize everyone.
Yeah, and then McCulloch took over for him when Morrison created him an Animal Man.
And we have Dr. Light, who is known as a serial rapist, also making a very awkward comment considering his reputation.
Yes.
They're asking for it in those outfits, so yeah.
This was kind of a weird thing for Morrison to have, you know. I like the scene at the top of the page 17 where you have, you know, to distract the Justice League. They have all 30 supervillains marching up Main Street in Metropolis.
Oh, and that's what they were marching about. I thought they were marching because of the whole thing where they got sent off planet for being.
That might be.
Yeah.
I just chalked it up to them providing some kind of a distraction because Dr. Light and Mirror Master are pretty major, not so much Mirror Master, but after Identity Crisis, I think that Dr. Light would probably be majorly on the Justice League's radar.
Yep.
So it could be a tie into Salvation Run, too. But you've got just a... That I thought that was a good scene, but then you've got, you know, Dr. Light asking about some Viagra because he's going to meet Giganta. That was kind of just odd and out of place, I have to say.
But if you think about it, it actually fits his character because he's kind of a dick. So
yeah, that's true.
No pun intended.
Yeah. And then on the next page, we're introduced to the scene of the Secret Society of Supervillains, where you've got Ocean Master, Vandal Savage, Lex Luthor, Dr. Savannah, and Gorilla Grodd. And they're discussing the proposition put out by Libra, as Libra's come to take over the Secret Society. And Libra kind of totally slams Vandal Savage. Where he's like, you've been around for 5,000 years and we're still waiting for you to take over civilization.
That was great. And so, we never actually
find... We see that Libra sitting in Metron's chair, and we also have the
Crime Bible.
Yep. Sitting next to him, yeah. Which it deals with the exploits of Cain and his works of evil in the world in association with Lilith. And it's kind of this super villain religious artifact that was introduced in 52, which was co-written by Grant Morrison.
Yeah, we never actually find out who Libra is, and
Libra.
Yeah, but
in the Secret Files, he's Libra.
I have a feeling that a couple of years from now, Morrison will do something else that will touch on Libra, on who he actually is. Because I have
I think it kind of fits with Grant Morrison's MO, because he loves to just find these random Silver Age characters that were used once and never used again, and bringing them back to be used. The same with the Human Flame, also, who's just this really lame Martian Manhunter villain.
Yeah, the only reason I don't think Libra is regular JLA Libra is the fact that he has a connection to the New Gods. He's obviously working for them. And
well, they revealed that in Secret File in the Final Crisis Secret Files, and I'll tell you about that. Well, I guess I can say it now. Basically, in the original Justice League story with Libra, he siphoned the powers off of the Justice League, and he obtained near godhood. And he ended up traveling and landing on Apocalypse, where he was found by Desaad. And he also met Metron. Metron was there as well, observing. And he got just tortured and tortured by Desaad. And this is, I think he arrived on Apocalypse sometime close to when Final Crisis begins. Because Darkseid tells him that if he submits to his service, then he'll release him from Desaad's torture. And he says that he has plans for him. And so he gives him some of his power, and he sends him off to get all the supervillains in line for the events of Final Crisis.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So as we continue the him giving, you know, the supervillain pitch, you know, to get them all on board.
Yeah, because he says he's going to give them all their heart's desire, and Luther is kind of like, yeah, you're not going to be able to give my heart's desire. Which we find out he kind of does, in a way.
Yeah. And if it wasn't for the monitors, he would have gotten away with it.
Yeah.
And we also see one of the villains, you know, recording the whole thing on his cell phone, which is just what's going to end up on YouTube. Come on.
They never show it, but I think that might have been what Morrison was going for. You know, because pretty much with the video capabilities of cell phones, you know, we can take video of pretty much anything and then put it up on YouTube, which is going along with kind of the technology we saw in the past with the fire, and now we see, you know, him using the cell phone. And also because he is totally in line with Libra and is confident that he'll get his greatest wish granted, and he's, you know, ready to be taking video of that.
And after that, the next sequence, we have Libra giving one of the villains his heart's desires, killing Martian Manhunter in front of everyone, and, like, he doesn't even flinch or think about it, he just, bam!
Yeah, it's awesome, because on the previous panel, Libra just, he has on his scales with the spear at the end that lights a flame, and Lex Luthor's asking Libra what's in it for him, getting all these supervillains together, and Libra has that great line, can't we murderers, madmen, and masterminds work in harmony just this once to achieve something none of us have ever had before? And Luther's like, what's in it for you? And he's like, an end to the age of superheroes, a full-on no-bullshit Twilight of the Gods. And he just lights up his staff, and they bring in Martian Manhunter, who's been shot with pyro tranquilizers, which is something you'd think Morrison would come up with.
Yeah.
And then there's Human Flame with his cell phone, and Libra just stabs him straight through the heart with his flaming spear.
And you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, it did go up on YouTube, because this is the footage that they were showing of the news of the Martian Manhunter getting killed. Because I don't remember if it's in this issue or another one, we see that footage of Libra, like, stabbing him with a flaming spear. On a television.
Oh, I'll have to look out for that.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think of Martian Manhunter's death?
I've never been
It's kind of done abrupt, you know, they kind of just bring him in and just stab him.
Yeah, I mean, it was advertised as like a huge hero of the DC Universe will die, and there was a whole speculation who it was going to be, and a lot of trying to guess, and most people, for some reason, knew it was going to be Martian Manhunter. I've never read his series, so I wouldn't know why. Maybe there were some hints there. But, yeah, it seemed kind of weird, you know, just bring him in and kill him. He doesn't even get a word in the entire issue, so...
Well, all the villains were also pissed because he infiltrated their ranks during Salvation Run. So
yeah.
All the villains were pissed at him because of that.
Yeah, I did hear of that, and, you know, it's, well, they do mention he's drugged or something, because,
Yeah, with pyro tranquilizers.
Yeah, because you'd think the most powerful, psychic in the DC universe could, like, maybe shut the villain's minds, you know, put him into a coma so he can break free or something.
Page. Well, he's not really a sidekick.
Psychic.
He's pretty up there. I mean, he's got, you know, the phasing and the, you know, the telekinesis, and he's got the strength, and he's got the flight.
And the morphing power. Yeah.
Yeah.
So but he's said,
pretty powerful.
Yeah, but whenever we have, like, a scene with Martian Manhunter in the JLA, the first thing he does, I mean, he doesn't, like, turn into someone to get into a hard location or someone. Batman's just, like, he's basically a cell phone for the JLA in what I've read. Because they're like, Martian Manhunter, connect our minds so we can coordinate. And that's pretty much all I've seen him do in, like, Heaven's Ladder and things like that.
And also the... I love just the human flame. I don't even know... I know he showed up in an issue of Detective Comics with the Martian Manhunter. I don't know if he's been seen since, but he just seems like this totally goofy... Once again, a totally goofy Silver Age villain that Morrison brings back for the story.
Yeah. Like...
I can see how people would think it was kind of unceremonious for Martian Manhunter to just get, you know, stabbed in one panel and that's it, but I think it kind of added to the whole crisis mentality of it because it's not a crisis in the traditional sense, you know, following the lines of Crisis on Infinite Earths and Infinite Crisis where you've got a whole bunch of superheroes and villains just beating the crap out of each other on every page, and it's just an all-out battle royale, but it's kind of a crisis in the feeling you get in some of the issues when the events with Darkseid progress. And I think that just bringing in Martian Manhunter and just killing him that quick kind of added to that crisis tension. Somewhere.
You know what? I've heard that comment a lot, that it didn't have, like, a crisis feel to it. But if you, like, pay attention, this was like every other crisis except the camera focused on other parts of the story, you know? Because you see people talking and scenes going on here and there, and in the background you see those huge fights going on, or you hear about them, but you never actually see them, you know?
Yeah.
So, it was like a... I guess this was like more of a documentary of what was happening than other than, like, the big scopes story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
After that we get the Reverend talking about the disaster in Bloodhaven to the news.
Yep.
And we have the Tattooed Man, that's his name, right?
Yeah, that's the Tattooed Man. Yeah.
Which first time I saw him was I think it was either in Green Lantern or Raven the Bull. I think it was Green Lantern, the team up issue with Batman, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's where I saw him first. The Green Lantern issue with bats. Yeah.
Yeah, then he's talking to Turpin at a bar, and he's obviously working for the Darkseid's club. And so he's taking
him... He'll play a very significant role in later issues, too.
Oh, yeah. Those tattoos are a powerful thing. And we see him lead him into the Darkseid's club. You know, the boss has agreed to meet him, I guess. And
you see the Omega symbol on the entranceway, which is the symbol of Darkseid. And also the Reverend Good will be revealed. I can't remember which issue it is. I think it's 5. I think it's 5, where it's revealed that he's Glorious Godfrey, who is one of Darkseid's elite, and he has a power of persuasion, which makes sense that he would be, you know, one of these
convincing everyone.
Reverends. Yeah, speaking... And he's speaking about Bloodhaven, which was ruined, I think, in the wake of Infinite Crisis. I think Bloodhaven was just, pretty much
nuked.
Made into
yeah.
a wasteland. Yeah, it was nuked, pretty much. And we'll definitely have a lot more focusing on Bloodhaven in the next issue.
Yeah, and some of the art touches that I noticed, you see this... This news, the newspaper on, oh no, wait, no, it's a lost dog. I thought it was about lost children. But in the background, you see the Statue of Liberty. So, how do you get from Metropolis to New York so fast? I don't know. Or do they have the Statue of Liberty in Metropolis too? I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not an expert on DC Geography?
I don't know what to tell you.
Because it shows up towards, again, in the end of the issue with Anthro.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and I'm not sure, is that supposed to be Metropolis or New York? I don't know.
Because if it is, then I guess Turpin has a hell of a jurisdiction, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I was kind of hoping that the graffiti in the background of where Turpin and Tattooed Man are walking, I was hoping the graffiti would say Zurinar, but unfortunately no. That would have been a cool touch, though.
Yeah.
Alright, so we go to the next page where we have Turpin meeting Darkseid, although it's not the craggy-faced, gray-skinned Darkseid we're used to, but the African-American boss known as Darkseid, two words. And he tells Kalibak and Kanto to leave him in peace. And Kalibak is the son, the legitimate son of Darkseid. And Kanto is a student of Granny Goodness's who showed up first in the Mr. Miracle series of Kirby's original Fourth World series of books. And then Turpin and Darkseid have a little chat, and Turpin mentions he expected to see somebody younger, and Darkseid makes a comment about bodies wearing out hard, and we see, and we later see that Darkseid will use Turpin's body as a vessel, because the new gods can't remain in the human bodies, and we also see that the bodies wear out for the other Darkseid's minions, such as Reverend Good, Glorious Godfrey, in issue number 5, and how their bodies wear out and Darkseid doesn't do a thing for them. And he asks about the missing kids, and he Darkseid tells him that he's given them to Granny, which is, of course, a reference to Granny Goodness. Another interesting thing is the dialogue is we have Darkseid saying, and me, I was hurt in a fall, you might say, which is another reference to the war, the great war between Apocalypse and New Genesis, where Darkseid fell and the heavens cracked. That was spoken by Orion in the very beginning of the issue, and then we have him say, but it's what we endure that makes us strong, don't you think? And then we have Turpin's line, my father used to say the same thing, which is interesting considering how he came in contact with Orion in the beginning of the issue, and Orion is Darkseid's son.
And then Darkseid, Mob King, turns takes his glasses off, and we see the terrible red eyes, which let us know that this is the actual Darkseid, the god. So Turpin confronts him, tries to get some info out of him, which he then learns you do not threat a god.
Nope, you sure don't.
And he puts him on his knees and consider it good that he did it, because it's the best way you can see the face of the new model of human on your knees. And he admits it. He has the kids, and they are beyond salvation. These children have been the first guinea pigs, I guess, of
the anti-life equation.
The anti-life equation, which he's going to throw all over the place in the coming issues.
Yep, which he's long sought after, and he's finally been able to master. And we'll see him raise all kinds of hell with the anti-life equation in the later issues. And then from there, we have a kind of weird scene at the Justice League headquarters, where we have a Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman discussing the discovery of Orion's body. And we kind of have it being talked about a little bit, like the new gods haven't been met before. And I can see, you know, you've got Vixen, Firestorm, and Red Tornado, and Hawkgirl, which aren't, you know, usual members of the Justice League, you know, but I would think that they have met the New Gods.
But also remember, this is New Earth, so the continuity isn't set in stone.
Well, you'd think they'd carry over continuity elements like that, you know?
But who knows?
It just read like a kind of an odd scene, because I'd figured that all of the members of the Justice League would probably be aware of the New Gods. So it was kind of an odd scene. Although I can also... it's just an odd scene. Although a couple of interesting things you have in the panels 2 and 3, you have the Trinity... just the Trinity, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, just seeing a shot of them in the panels 2 and 3, and also in the second panel when they're talking about the incidences of contact with the gods of New Genesis and Apocalypse having been on the increase, you see an angel in the background, which is kind of interesting considering how all this talk of gods... going through the issue.
Yep. We also have the Alpha Lanterns. Instead of just having the crime zone in lockdown, they're locking down the entire Earth.
Yep.
And we have the monitors.
Yep. There's a couple of notes on this splash page where we have the Orrery of Worlds, which seems to be keeping all the Earths in equilibrium and being observed by the monitors. You've got mention of the Bleed, which is the space between all the parallel universes. And you've got special attention being paid to New Earth, because that's... New Earth is pretty much the like they said in the previous page, it's the foundation stone. It's where all of the rest of the multiverse rests, and if New Earth goes, then the entire multiverse just goes with it. And you also have a reference to universe number 51 being destroyed, which was destroyed in Countdown, the comic book that doesn't exist, and it was destroyed in a battle between Monarch and Superboy Prime. And we have Nyx Wotan, who is actually mentioned by name in Countdown number 1, that he is going to face absolute sanction for his failure in protecting Earth number 51, which is an interesting choice of words, seeing how we see Darkseid use the Omega Sanction in Final Crisis number 6 on Batman.
After that, we go to Nyx's trial, where he's being given his sentence by one of the older monitors, which is weird considering they were all, like, created at the same time, but due to their exposure with humans and, or bacteria, as they call them, they've started to take on, their own personalities and different looks and everything, and, Nyx tries to explain that it was not his fault. There was a sabotage involved, which we in a couple of pages we start seeing that he's not making that up. He actually was, and so his sentence is exile, and we see his girlfriend run out of the room because she cannot bear to see that end. And his last words are, "I'll promise I'll find a way back to Wijavel," which we later see that he actually does. She's his only link to his past monitor life. So, yeah.
Yep, and on this page we see a number of monitors which will play a big part in Final Crisis to come. We see Zillow Vala, who will play a big role in Superman Beyond. We also see Ogama, who is the monitor of Earth number 43, which is the Earth where the Red Rain Batman is supposed to exist, which is very interesting considering what later happens to him in Final Crisis. And from the Nyx's exile, where he's where we see later he will actually be exiled to Earth, New Earth. We see Zillow Vala talking to Weejadale and wondering what's happening to them. And Zillow Vala kind of plays catch-up on the progression of Countdown, where the monitors were at once all the same, but now all the monitors have... They all have names and stories. There are heroes and villains, secrets and lovers, and all the monitors that were basically all the same being are now different, and they have their own lives, and they're now their own individuals.
Also, how their environment is changing around them, too, where before they were just inside a regular satellite, now they have this whole... They have cities and plants and an ocean ahead of them.
Yeah, they had this cold satellite in Countdown, and now they have, you know, the sea and the clouds and...
It looks like they're in a dome, in a huge dome facility or pocket dimension or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. And then we also get Ogama speaking, kind of breaking the fourth wall, speaking to the audience. Attentions wander. Wotan. Wotan, my only obstacle is gone. We're on. He's kind of speaking, kind of breaking the fourth wall there in Morrisonian style, talking to us that now, you know, Final Crisis is going to be ramping up, but he's also, you could also say, is speaking to Mandrak, the Dark Monitor, who will learn more about in Superman Beyond.
And we go back to Anthro, who's looking at the either sunrise or sunset as he seems to be cooking a bird he catch, and you see him drawing a sigil on the sand, which is also the symbol that Metron had on his chest.
Yes, and it also bears a bit of a resemblance to the miracle machine,
the God Weapon.
The God Weapon, which we will see in Final Crisis number 6.
And after he draws the sigil, he looks kind of surprised at it, like maybe it was something he didn't know what he was drawing at or something like that. So
I think it's more the realization that there's that a ocean-covered New York City suddenly appeared out of nowhere behind him, and Commandy, the last boy, is running towards him, saying, "Metron gave you a weapon against the gods. We need it now." And Anthro has no idea what he's talking about, and then, you know, everything disappears, and everything's back to normal in the past, but then we see the face of Anthro, and we see that it's covered in the same design that was on the face of Metron.
He's actually putting it on. You can see a finger as he's like finishing it up on his cheek. Yeah.
And that face symbol will become very important as we continue with Final Crisis.
Yeah. Also, one thing we never actually find out how Anthro got to the future and how he went back. So that's.
I think that was kind of just a part of the multiverse crumbling as a result of Darkseid's fall throughout it.
Any theories on how Commandy knows Anthro has the weapon?
Okay, let me see. Okay, is this the Commandy from Final Crisis number 7, or is this a potential Commandy from a potential future of New Earth?
It's Morrison, so it could go either way.
Yeah. You could say that it's Commandy from a potential future of New Earth, because I'm pretty sure that Anthro is taking place on New Earth. Is in the past of New Earth. So if we're saying that, and we see the Commandy in the Command D bunker in Bloodhaven, and I'm pretty sure it's in the next issue we actually see the Commandy that was introduced in the potential committee that was introduced in Countdown in that bunker. So you could say that in a possible future, everything explodes and only Commandy is left alive in the wake of Darkseid's anti-life equation.
But I initially thought of that as, you know, how he's the last boy on Earth and all that. But yeah. There, Morrison wouldn't, like, screw up something like a piece of dialogue like this. If that would have been the case, it would have been more likely, like, you have a weapon against the gods, I need it, or something, because, like, we need it now, so we multiple, like, it. There's more, not just him. Maybe that's just how I took it, but maybe you're right.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's not really clear. That was all just me tossing out an idea. The whole timeline with Commandy showing up does seem kind of odd.
Yeah. And after that we have a scene of Nix Wotan waking up to his regular mortal life, and I think he was like not supposed to remember anything of his minor days, but somehow he looks at his hands, he looks around, and something doesn't feel right, you know. You get that feeling from him looking at his hands and looking around them. And he sees on TV that superheroes have known that have found out that a Martian Manhunter was murdered. And we've been reading DOA, the God of War.
Yep. And also, we see that on the screen, the TV screen as well.
We see that he has like a bunch of space-related stuff in his room, so which fits him great, considering even though he doesn't supposed to remember, you know, he still likes huge space-related stuff. And we also see a lot of calculus and math books, which leads us to believe he's quite a smart individual, I guess.
Yeah.
And that is it. To be continued.
Yep. And of course, this issue was written by Grant Morrison with art by J.G. Jones. Colors by Alex Sinclair, lettering by Rob Lay, Adam Schlagman was the assistant editor, and Eddie Braganza was the editor, doing it at the very end, just like the issue. So I think that wraps up this first issue. Do you have any final thoughts that you wanted to that you didn't get a chance to talk about in while we were going through it?
Look, I'm flipping through my notes, and now it appears we hit every highlight.
All right.
So to the listeners, this was just the setup for the series, so you should get ready for a wild ride, and we're here to let you know what you didn't understand as best we could, and I'm sure that there's like a million things we missed too, but we'll try our best to make it make sense for you.
Because we're no means, like, we're not scholars or experts or anything, we're just two guys who really love the book, who want to just go through and just bring up all the things we noticed and some of our favorite moments throughout the issues. And I'm sure there's a couple, because we could easily go on to one of the couple of annotation sites and just run down all the annotations on there, but then that would just be regurgitating, you know, what they said. So it's entirely possible that we missed something. I'm sure there's going to be a thread on, there'll probably be a thread on the comic book page forum. So if you had any other things you noticed that we missed, or you have any
questions
just post on the forum, and we'll definitely bring those up in future episodes, because we'll be around for a couple at least. So, and we're also planning to do a big show at the end covering the series as a whole, and wrapping up any questions and just discussing it as a whole, with some people who liked it, some people who didn't like it, and just getting both points of view on the whole thing. But before that, we still have a couple more issues to go, so we'll get through those first and see what happens from there. All right, so I think that wraps it up, wouldn't you say, Juan?
Yep, I just want to thank everyone for joining us for this episode, and hopefully we didn't bore you, and you'll be back for part two.
Yep. All right, so I guess we'll see you guys when we discuss Final Crisis issue number 2.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what we've discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.